Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, though, a 38-year-old woman with incurable cancer has received an apology in court from the HSE over the failings that occurred in two smear tests which led to her diagnosis. The apology was read out in the High Court as Leona Macken and her husband, Alan, settled their legal action against the HSE arising from what they said were failures in the cervical check screening programme in 2016 and 2020. And for more on this, I'm joined in the studio this morning by Leona. And Leona, thanks so much for coming in to us this morning. It's great to have you with us. But I want to go back to yesterday. I know it was a huge day for yourself and Alan. What was it like when you got the apology in court?
It was very overwhelming, actually. I was really ready for it. I think Alan was really upset. I felt like I was comforting him more. But for me, I was ready for it. It was a nice conclusion. I was shocked when I heard we got the apology first, but I think seeing the words on paper, it really meant so much to me. I didn't realise how much it would mean to me because I hadn't been thinking about it too much. I was thinking, will we get it or won't we get it? And then when they said we got it, just seeing the words on paper was really overwhelming. Like,
can you explain to people why it was so important for you to get the apology?
I think just to be acknowledged, like, and for the failures to be said, like, yeah, everything you've done was right. Like, I think with cervical cancer, for me personally, when I was saying to people I had cervical cancer, I almost felt like I had to stick up for myself and say, I did get my smears, by the way, you know. And people were kind of like, oh my God, you did get your smears. So I just felt like I needed to stick up for myself as well and be like, I did do everything I was meant to do, you know. And for them to then validate that was huge for me. Like,
you really did do everything you should do. Because even back before, years ago, when Jade Goody went through what she did, that put it front of mind with you, as it did with so many of us. And you went out and got your own smears and paid for them at that stage.
Yeah, I paid for it myself. I think there was a huge surge of smears at the time. And like, I think I was 21. So, I mean, I would have watched Big Brother from the very first one. And, you know, we followed her whole story. And with me and my friends at the time, we would have been like, my God, I never really heard about cervical cancer till then. Didn't know anything about a smear. So I was like, right, I'm going to go and get one of these. And obviously wasn't expecting anything to come back and it was fine. And then I had another one in 2013. That was my eligible one then for cervical check. And then it was every 3 years after that and I went for it and always knew when I was due it, right, I have to book this in. So it was something I was always on top of. So I never thought cancer at all. Like,
Can you tell me about what happened then when you were diagnosed with cancer? You yourself knew there was something wrong, did you?
I knew there was something wrong for, like, I'd say I had symptoms for a good while, but when it was about a year and a half, I was kind of really going and like, going, what is this? You know, I had a lot of questions. Again, I'd had two babies, so I was thinking my body's changing. You know, I was thinking maybe polycystic ovaries, endometriosis, perimenopause. Like, we were going through everything. I was getting bloods done. I was getting tests done. I was getting ultrasounds. Everything was coming back normal, like, and I just did not think cancer at all because I knew I'd been so careful. And I also knew it was a slow progressing cancer. So I knew, like, that if there was something there, I would have had abnormalities at some stage, you know. And I think, like, everyone around me was thinking the same. And then when I went for the smear in 2023 and it came back, I was like, I knew before I was even diagnosed. I went through all the symptoms and I was like, that's exactly what I've been complaining about.
So your smear in 2016 showed nothing. You were told there was nothing there.
Told there was nothing there.
The same in 2020. And then in 2023, you had, knowing that there was something wrong for about a year and a half, then you get the confirmation in 2023.
Yeah.
And what were you told then?
I was just told, first of all, that it was cancer and we didn't know what stage it was. Like, I needed tests and stuff. And then I was told it was like stage 1B2. And then I had to have a hysterectomy and stuff, which at the time, it all happened really quickly. Like, I was diagnosed in June, I had the hysterectomy in July. I didn't have time to think and I just thought, get this out of my body. Like, you know, I'll worry about it later. I'll deal with it later. And then when I had the hysterectomy, they realised there was lymph node involvement. So then I was staged at 3C1. And I was told I need chemotherapy and radiotherapy for 5 weeks. And I went through that and I just thought everything was going to be fine then, you know. And I was kind of reassured everything will be fine. And I just wasn't getting any better. I was in a lot of pain. The pain was progressing. I was trying to communicate it, but it was also hard because my body had been through a lot at this stage. I'd been through, like, you know, the hysterectomy and the chemo and the radiotherapy, and I was now in menopause, and it was very hard to pinpoint what was what. And I just kept going back, going, no, I'm not right, I'm not right. And then obviously in January, like this year, I went back again, and I was like, look, I don't feel good. I have a lump in my stomach. And when they felt the lump, then they were like, okay, we need an ultrasound. And then I was, I think it was like 2 weeks later, I was, for sure I knew before they said it again that I was back, like, you know, I was stage four then.
What does that mean, stage four?
So stage four is basically, it's treatable to a certain extent, but it's not curable. When I went in first, I mean, as you can imagine, being told you have stage four cancer after being through, you know, everything else, and knowing at this stage, I knew, I was like, this could have been avoided. Like, it just, it was gut-wrenching. Like, it was, I felt like so hard done by. I was like, I done everything I could do. How did I get to this point? Like, mm-hmm. you know, and then I'd go home and tell my parents, like, that I was now stage four. Like, even facing my family and telling them was horrific. That was the worst part of it for me. Telling them, like, this is what's happening now, you know. But to be honest, I didn't know too much about, like, immunotherapy and things like that. And I went home and I was, like, contacting this and that. And then when I went back in 2 weeks later, they were kind of saying, you know, we're going to do a quadruple therapy. So that's, like, two chemotherapies, one immunotherapy, or two immunotherapies. Again, I didn't know if I was going to be eligible for the immunotherapy. Like, they have to, like, check your markers and stuff. And then when they told me I was relieved. But at this point, I'm just still not giving in. Like, you know, I just mm-hmm. want to find, I want to be the one to do it. Like, I want to be the one to go, I done it. Like,
and you're going in for, after our chat today, you're going in for another session of that quad chemotherapy.
Yeah. So I've had four so far. This will be my fifth, and I have one more after that.
Is the aftermath of that really tough, or how
it
is it?
It is. Like, I need to be very tired now, to be fair, after it. But I'm getting through it as best as I can. I thought I'd be a lot worse. I have a lot of pain in my throat and things like that. But other than that, I think I'm getting through it okay. You know, I thought I'd be like taken to the bed and stuff. But I probably do for a day. I try not to do it for 2 days, you know.
So it's quad therapy is a double chemotherapy and immunotherapy as well.
Yeah,
all at the same time.
Yeah.
Gosh, it even sounds tough, you know.
Yeah, it's a long day, like, you know, but it's only every 3 weeks. So I've 3 weeks to kind of build myself up then again and then get back into it again, you know.
And how old are your girls now?
So Drew is 5, she'll be 6 next week, and Quinn is 8.
Do you talk to them about it?
At the 8-year-old, I do. Like, she'll ask me things like, you know, will you be okay? And I don't say yes or no. I kind of say I'm trying my best. Like, telling them, for me, that my hair was going to go and stuff was the hardest part of it, because being two little girls and me being a hairdresser, it was like a really big deal, you know. More for them, I kind of didn't care. I was over that at that stage. But for them, they were crying, and I let them cut it with me. I let them shave it with Alan and stuff, like, you know, I let them do it so that I didn't walk in and be like, suddenly have a shaved head. So we tried to make it as fun as possible.
Yeah.
But like, to be honest, they've been great. They've been so resilient every stage of it. I mean, Drew was just, she was 3 when I was first diagnosed. She just turned 4. She doesn't really know any different now, like, than me going to doctor's appointments and doing this and that and talking about medicine, you know. Quinn, obviously, she's 8, she takes it in more, she understands a lot more. So I do have to be a bit more careful with her, but I try and be as honest as possible without giving her too much information, you know.
Yeah, it's the toughest part of it, though, I'd imagine, right?
It is the toughest part of it, but it's also, like, what keeps me going is looking at them, and, you know, that's my drive. Like, I want to see them grow up. Like, you know, that's all I've ever wanted. Just a simple life, like, you know, and I have such a beautiful life, and I just don't want to leave it. Like,
I'm just listening to you, you know, listening to what you've gone through over the last 2 years. And I'm wondering, where did you get the time even and the headspace to pursue the case?
It's just a drive within me, I think. I mean, I have 2 little girls growing up now, and I'm worried about them. I'm like, what's going to happen? You know, it's not good enough what's happening. Like, I shouldn't be going through this today. I shouldn't be living this today. Like, you know, and there's like almost, I think, over 2,000 women have been diagnosed with cervical cancer since 2018. And you know, it's like, it's what's going to happen? Like, is there going to be more? Are they going to look into it more? Is the audit going to come back? You know, they stopped that in 2018 and it hasn't come in since. So, like, I mean, I too misdiagnosed marriage. Surely my 2016 one would have been picked up and I would have got less treatment or something like that, and I would have been getting on with my life now.
The minister was on Morning Ireland this morning, Minister for Health Jennifer Carroll McNeill, and she added her voice to the apology you got yesterday. She said that medical negligence cases need to be treated in a different way, and she talked about full and open disclosure. Is that something that you would welcome? Do you think it's important to hear the minister say those words?
I think it's important for her to speak up, for sure. Like, I know my solicitor has contacted her, and also Simon Harris.
Do you want to meet the Minister for Health?
Absolutely love to meet her. Yeah, I mean, I'm a very open person and I'm very open to a chat. And, you know, I think as well, they need to see these people in real life and see what they're going through. Like, you know, and they're not just a cancer, but like there's stories behind these people, like, you know, where it's affecting my mom, my dad, like where people's daughters, mothers, you know, and we shouldn't be going through it. Like, and that's the most frustrating part, is it could have been avoided, you know?
Yeah. Although your parents said really, I mean, I was reading the comments yesterday after the case. They're so proud of you and what you've done.
They are. They're so proud, you know, but they're heartbroken at the same time. And I'm really, really lucky with the support I have. And I know not everybody has the support I have. I mean, I have a huge support of family, friends. My husband's amazing. Our community have been unbelievable. Like, the schools, everyone has just really got together and really got behind us, you know, and that keeps me going too. It's like it's very overwhelming seeing how many people care, you know, or just want me to do well. And it's mad. It's a feeling that I'm struggling with, actually. Like,
but the people are being so good.
Yeah, it's
and
very
so
overwhelming, because you're like, you know, I'm not the only person to go through this. And you know, so many people have reached out to me, and our community actually did like a run there at the weekend, like a little mini marathon kind of thing around the area. And just even seeing that, like seeing them all coming back and hugging me, and I was just crying for the whole day, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but you need to soak that up, because that's what gets
you
through.
They keep telling me. I know, it's just, it's really hard.
So do you still say to women that they should have those smears done?
100%.
How do you feel about the
100%. I would never tell someone to not get a smear. I mean, okay, it didn't work for me. It doesn't mean it's not going to work for you. Like, I have two little girls. They'll be definitely getting the vaccinations. Like, you know what I mean? Without a shadow of a doubt. I don't know how to answer. Like, you know, is it like, okay, I trusted it. I really did. I believed in it so much, to the point that, like, as I said, cancer just was not on my radar at all. I was thinking of everything else, you know. But I would never tell someone not to get a smear. Absolutely not. Like, you know, they're so, so important. And I mean, I know so many friends that have had LETS treatment and have found out they're SYN 1, SYN 2. I mean, it's something I would have loved to got the chance to have found out. But yeah, I mean, I don't want people to take from this that I'm saying smears don't work. You know, it's just, they need to be checked more, like, you know, and something isn't working, like, somewhere, and that's what we need to find out.
Leona, it's been a great pleasure to meet you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for speaking out and going public as well, because I think it's really important that people hear you and see you, and we wish you well today.
Thank you so much. Thanks,
Your treatment that you're going on to have today and in the future as well. And Alan and the girls as well. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Claire.
Now, we've had a statement from the HSE relating to that interview we had there with Leona Macken just before the break. It says, we wish to express our deep regret to Ms. Macken and her family and acknowledge the many challenges they faced as a result of this diagnosis. Our purpose in screening is to try and detect cancer early for as many women as possible, and it's deeply regrettable that screening doesn't work for everyone. Now, while we cannot comment on an individual case, we know that people will continue to develop cancer despite screening. We fully appreciate this is a very difficult situation for those affected. We're very aware of the additional trauma court cases bring for women seeking answers around how and why their cancer developed despite screening. We've established a process called a personal cervical screening review, through which women who develop cancer after screening can have the answers they're seeking about their screening tests in a holistic, patient-centred way. This process was developed in partnership with women who previously had developed cancer cancer after screening. They say they welcome the work from the Department of Health to look at alternative ways of addressing harms in healthcare. We've published a legal framework group report. The conclusions of that report are supported by the recommendations of the World Health Organization's report on best practice in cervical screening. It notes that most legal and ethical frameworks in the healthcare sphere were developed in the context of diagnosis and treatment, and so many of the legal and ethical complexities in screening arise from the fact that the process is not diagnostic. Now, that's that statement today, although it doesn't overrule or negate the apology that Leona Macken had in the High Court yesterday, where the HSE acknowledged that her cervical smear tests in 2020 and in 2016 were misread, and we're very grateful to Leona for coming in to us this morning.